From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Thursday saw an interesting exchange between the U.S. and China across half a globe. We begin at a press conference held by China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi in Beijing at the National People's Congress on Thursday.
Dear members of the press, good morning. At the outset, I wish to extend festive greetings to all Chinese women, including the female journalists in this room. I also wish to thank the press, Chinese and foreign, for having shown understanding and support for China's foreign policy and external relations. Everything we have accomplished, you have played a part. Thank you. Now I'm ready to take your questions.
谢谢主持人，外长您好，我是人民日报的记者。
People's Daily. Since the 18th National Congress of the Communist Party of China, China has made unprecedented progress in its foreign relations, which is widely praised across the country. Following the 19th Party Congress, what will be the highlights of China's diplomatic agenda this year?
党的十八大以来。
Under the outstanding leadership of the CPC Central Committee, with Comrade Xi Jinping at its core since the 18th Party Congress 5 years ago, we have traveled on a road of major country diplomacy that reflects China's distinct vision, style, and values. Producing historic accomplishments, our diplomatic efforts have been instrumental to upholding China's interests and dignity and to facilitating China's reform and development. Last October, General Secretary Xi Jinping emphasized in his report to the 19th Party Congress that China will work with other countries to foster a new type of international relations and to build a global community with a shared future. This is the aim of China's major country diplomacy in the new era.
2018
is the first year for implementing the decisions of the 19th Party Congress. Guided by Xi Jinping's thought on socialism with Chinese characteristics for a new era, we in the diplomatic service will take new steps and make new advances. The main highlights of China's diplomatic calendar will include the following four events we're going to host. First, the Bao Forum for Asia annual conference, which will take place in Hainan this April, and focus on reform and opening up. In this 40th anniversary year of reform and opening up, we will review China's successful experience and sketch new possibilities for reform and opening up in the new era. Second, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit, which will take place in Qingdao this June, and focus on revitalizing the Shanghai spirit. The expanded SCO will rededicate itself to the Shanghai spirit of mutual trust and benefit, equal-footed consultation, respect for diversity of civilizations, and pursuit of common development. The summit will set the SCO on the new journey of consolidation and growth. Third, the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation Summit, which will take place in Beijing this September, and focus on the Belt and Road Initiative. A great opportunity for our African brothers and sisters to participate fully in the BRI, the summit will give new impetus to the China-Africa Comprehensive Strategic Partnership. Fourth, the first China International Import Expo, which will take place in Shanghai this December, and focus on the further market opening. China will embrace the world with open arms and enormous market potential. All will be welcome to access and benefit from the new opportunities of China's development. China's diplomatic agenda for 2018 are unfolding even as we speak. In the new era, we will work harder to see that China will enjoy a better environment for development and make greater contributions to human progress. Thank you.
下一个问题。 白冰，中区第二排第四位这位先生，穿绿衣服。
Thank you, Foreign Minister. I'm from Reuters. I have a North Korea-related question for you. China has always said that one of the most important issues in the North Korea crisis is for there to be direct talks between North Korea and the United States. So what role does China have to facilitate such talks? And does China also believe that the United States needs to withdraw its military forces in South Korea for there to be a lasting peace on the Korean Peninsula? Thank you.
路透社, 中国一直高度重视朝美的直接谈判。 请问中国在这方面可以发挥什么作用？
This is the hottest topic in the world today. Seizing the opportunity of the Pyeongchang Olympics, the DPRK and the ROK have had a succession of interactions and achieved a rapid thaw in their relations, reversing the long-standing chill on the Korean Peninsula. The recent developments may seem baffling to some people, but are actually within the bounds of reason. During the Winter Games, the DPRK did not conduct any nuclear test, and the US and the ROK suspended their joint exercises targeting the DPRK. This proves that China's proposal of suspension for suspension was the right prescription for the problem and created basic conditions for the improvement of inter-Korean relations.
现在半导问题的解决终于朝正确方向。
The Korean Peninsula issue has finally taken an important step in the right direction. China fully commends and supports the efforts made by the two Koreas. To return the peninsula to peace and the nuclear issue to the track of dialogue, these initial steps must be followed up by corresponding and concerted efforts by the parties. To this end, we call on the parties, particularly the US and the DPRK, to engage in dialogue sooner rather than later. We encourage the parties to follow a dual-track approach of remaining committed to the goal of denuclearization and working actively to establish a peace mechanism on the peninsula. By addressing the parties' legitimate security concerns, including those of the DPRK, in exchange for and in tandem with progress towards denuclearization. And this is China's long-standing position and also the vision set forth in the relevant Security Council resolutions.
我还说的是啊,冰冻三尺非一日之寒, 尽管,
of course, it takes more than one cold day to freeze 3 feet of ice. Despite light at the end of the tunnel, the journey ahead won't be smooth. History has reminded us time and again that whenever tension subsided on the peninsula, the situation would be clouded by various interferences. Now is a crucial moment for testing the sincerity of the parties. Peace must be fought for. Opportunity needs to be seized. It falls to all parties to bear in mind the imperative of peace and the well-being of people in the region. All must demonstrate political courage and make a political decision to expeditiously carry out all necessary and useful engagements, both bilateral and plurilateral, and to do their best to restart dialogue and negotiation for the peaceful settlement of the nuclear issue. China will continue to make unremitting efforts for this outcome. Thank you.
谢谢，请继续提问。 左边第四排这位女士。
China Central Television.
谢谢主持人，我是中央电视台央视网央视新闻移动网的记者。
The Chinese people can tell that in the last 5 years, President Xi has been fully engaged in China's foreign policy. His personal diplomacy has enhanced China's image as a major country entering a new era, presented his image as a global statesman, and raised China's standing and international influence like never before. How do you see the role and impact of diplomacy conducted by President Xi as head of state? Head of state diplomacy, as the highest form of state-to-state interaction, plays a pivotal role and has irreplaceable strategic value. Since 2012, President Xi Jinping has been the chief architect of China's major country diplomacy. He was personally involved in the planning and conduct of head of state diplomacy, which by all accounts has been brilliant. To date, President Xi has visited 57 countries in different parts of the world and received more than 110 foreign heads of state. These important visits and meetings go a long way towards deepening the world's understanding of China, enhancing China's profile and influence, and facilitating the solution of many global problems. President Xi's leadership and charisma have earned him and his country many good friends among foreign leaders who represent a diverse range of cultures and social systems.
2018年除了主持刚才我所说的四大主场活动之外
In the year ahead, President Xi will host the four diplomatic events I mentioned earlier, and he will also participate in the BRICS Summit in South Africa, the APEC Economic Leaders Meeting in Papua New Guinea, and the G20 Summit in Argentina. We believe that President Xi's personal diplomacy will make a positive and responsible contribution to the welfare of his people,the interests of China, and the well-being of the world. It will write a whole new chapter of major country diplomacy with Chinese characteristics in the new era. Thank you.
好，谢谢。下一个问题。右区第三排，这边第一个，马跃。对。
Bloomberg。
你好，我是彭博社的记者。
U.S. President Donald Trump has said he will use all tools at his disposal to prevent China's state economic model from undermining international competition. How will China respond to that? Thank you.
谢谢。
你这个问题本身就很有攻击性。
This is a quite sharp question, as the foreign minister, let me reiterate for you China's policy towards the China-US relationship. Our two countries are agreed that we share broad interests and important responsibilities for global peace, stability, and prosperity. Our two countries are to carry out broad-based cooperation on the basis of mutual benefit, manage our differences on the basis of mutual respect.Deepen mutual understanding and friendship between our people and work together to address major regional and global challenges. Our two countries must work for the sustained, healthy, and steady growth of our relations.
合作应对重大的地区和全球性挑战。
Cooperation is the main thrust of China-US relations, and there are broad-based and close interactions between the two countries. According to the latest poll, over 50% of the American people have a favorable view of China. The figure has been rising steadily in recent years, and the figure I've just cited is the highest one in nearly 30 years. So I hope...People will not just focus on the problems in China-US relations, but will also pay attention to the positive aspects. As the world's largest developing and the largest developed country, the top two economies and permanent members of the UN Security Council, China and America working together will benefit not just our own countries, but also the whole world. If there is any competition between us, it has to be healthy,and positive. In fact, their competition aside, China and the United States don't have to be rivals, but we should strive to be partners in cooperation.
中国将继续坚持走自己选择的。
China is determined to stay on the path it has chosen, and China's development and revitalization is unstoppable. This is the consensus of the international community. Some Americans see China as a strategic competitor and allege that China will replace America's role in the world. This strategic conclusion is fundamentally wrong. China is on the path of socialism with distinctive Chinese characteristics.China's success is underpinned by its commitment to peaceful development and win-win cooperation. China's path is completely different from that of traditional powers, and as such, is commended and welcomed by a growing number of countries. The truth is, the more China develops, the more contribution China will make to the world. China is on a long march to modernization. It has no need or intention to displace America. China and America must respect each other, combine our strengths, and pursue win-win cooperation on the basis of the three joint communiques and our common understandings. China-U.S. relations have gone through a lot in the past few decades, but dialogue and cooperation has always carried the day. It is the wise thing to do. There can be no alternative.
That was China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi in Beijing on Thursday at the National People's Congress. A few hours later, in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson held a press conference with the chair of the African Union Commission, Musa Faki Mahamat. We bring you that in its entirety.
Well, first, let me thank Chairperson Faki for taking the time to meet with me. We had a very good meeting when I was able to host him at the high-level dialogue in Washington this past November, when we met with many other African leaders as well. And I'm really pleased to be here in the continent, and I expressed to the chairperson and his colleagues that it was appropriate that I begin my visit to Africa here with the African Union leaders as well. The African Union truly is a force for good, and we're grateful to the African Union's role in seeking solutions to help this continent move towards greater stability. Recognizing health security also advances national security, economic development, political stability. We applaud the Africa Centers for Disease Control, which has been quite successful in tracking and responding to disease outbreaks on the continent. We look forward to continuing our close cooperation with the African Union on this important initiative, and we're currently in very important discussions to update our joint memorandum of understanding to guide our future efforts, our collaborative efforts in that regard. On trade, we also support the Africa Union's economic regional integration efforts to lower intra-trade barriers on the continent, boost more intra-regional trade, which we know has been a central goal of the negotiations around the Continental Free Trade Agreement, which we are quite supportive of. We look forward to engaging further with the African Union once that agreement is in place on how this will also promote greater participation of U.S. private sector business interests as well. I mentioned to Chairperson Faki that we appreciate the African Union's very strong statements made on South Sudan at the recent AU summit. We truly call on all parties to abide by the cessation of hostilities and be open to compromise for the good of the South Sudanese people. We urge the AU and the Intergovernmental Authority on Development to keep their maximum efforts in moving forward to push for a solution to this conflict for the good of the people in South Sudan. I also appreciate Chairperson Faki's role in leading the African Union through a number of security challenges, and as you might imagine, that was a substantive part of our discussion today as well. The African Union's mission in Somalia, clearly an example of countries coming together to counter terrorism, promote stability, and enable delivery of much-needed aid to the Somali people. We encourage the African Union to continue these efforts. We will continue our own efforts as well. We've not yet won that battle in Somalia, and we must stay at it. We also discussed ways to ensure the G5 Sahel sources have the necessary resources to continue their fight against terrorism, and how we can put in place more sustainable funding models where they have greater certainty around how to plan the future fight against terrorism in the Sahel region as well. And we applaud the brave efforts of the part of the G5 Sahel forces. We discussed African Union reform and the chairperson's efforts to increase member state financing for the African Union and really put in place a more sustainable funding model with greater certainty as well. Last year's self-financing of African Union programs expanded to more than 40%, which is up from 26% just the prior year. So clearly the chairperson's efforts are yielding very good results. Fighting corruption is another area of common cause, and we're very pleased to see that the African Union has named 2018 as the year for winning the fight against corruption. From high-level secret deals to petty bribes on the street, corruption really does steal the precious resources from job creators and entrepreneurs and others who would promote benefits to the greater society and to the citizens of those countries. Good governance and transparency are essential to creating the conditions for economic growth and prosperity, and we look forward to continuing our joint efforts with the African Union to improve the business environment on the continent. But transparency really is an essential requirement for good business conditions and will attract greater investment and economic activity as well. That includes supporting greater intra and global trade investments in Africa as the environment creates competitive conditions. And finally, I reiterate our desire for more African nations to apply concrete diplomatic and economic pressure on North Korea. The goal of the Global Maximum Pressure Campaign, which has been supported by multiple UN Security Council resolutions, is to motivate North Korea to achieve the complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. African nations can contribute to this goal, and we need country by country for nations to take action to support this international effort towards a denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Again, I want to thank Chairperson Faki for his warm welcome and the hospitality during our discussions here at the African Union, and most importantly, for your leadership of the African Union. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Excellency. I'll now open the floor to questions, and in honor of International Women's Day, I'll take the first question from a female reporter, and I'll invite one of our guests from the American Media Corps to ask a question. Ms. Nike?
Mr. Secretary, this is your first trip to Africa as a top U.S. diplomat. You are calling it a listening tour, but how much listening do you expect to be doing about the president's allegedly derogatory remarks? How committed is the United States to the security and investment in Africa? Separately, what is your message to AU on the proposal to self-finance by levying tariffs on imports? Chairman Faki, if I may, first question. Ethiopia is a host of AU and a member. How concerned are you about the decision to impose a state of emergency that restricts freedom of speech? And do you believe the arbitrary detentions have violated people's rights? Separately, has the AU requested an apology for the U.S. President's recent remarks? Thank you very much.
Well, the United States and the African continent have enjoyed many, many years of very strong and positive relationships. In fact, we have diplomatic relations with some countries on the continent that span more than a century now. With the creation of the African Union, it has provided yet another area in which we can cooperate, collaborate to address security issues more broadly on the continent, as we've discussed in both of our remarks, and bring greater stability to the continent, and to discuss ways in which we can create economic prosperity, which will attract U.S. foreign direct investment. So the purpose of my trip to this continent is to listen. I think it is important that we listen to what the priorities of the countries here on the continent are and see where there is good alignment between their priorities and our areas of greatest interest as well. And I think we've already found there are many. And that should not surprise anyone. We have important joint security activities underway, and we appreciate the commitment made by many countries on the continent, not just with their own financial resources, but with their own men and women in uniform who are going right out on the front lines to fight this war against terror that we all are fighting globally. So this is an important trip. I think it is an indication of the importance the continent plays in the future of the United States, both from a security but also an economic standpoint. Africa as a continent is going to undergo significant population growth. Five of the world's fastest growing, 12 fastest growing economies are here in Africa. So clearly there is significant opportunity for American interest in the future. So it's important that we have very open dialogue with one another to understand our priorities and to understand how we align those priorities, and we support each other. So this is a vitally important continent to the U.S. and our future interest as well. I think with respect to the support for the counterterrorism efforts, we had a very good exchange on various ways that we can consider creating a more sustainable and certain funding model for the counterterrorism efforts, both not just through the G5 Sahel, but also AMISOM and other activities to win win the war against terror on the battlefield. But we also discussed the need to win the war in the social media and cyberspace as well. With Africa's very large and growing youth population, we must create good opportunities for education, for future jobs, so that the youth of Africa do not become easy targets for recruiting violent extremist messaging. And we had a good discussion about that as well today. So very broad canvas of a common interest that we have to discuss.
Before I reply to the question on Ethiopia, I want to add that I am satisfied with discussions that I have had with the Secretary of State Tillerson. The commitment of the United States to support the African continent in its fight against terrorism, whether it is the Horn of Africa, the support to AMISOM, or in the Sahel, whether it is to support the G5 Sahel Joint Force, through the mobilization of financial and material resources in order to support these important missions. As regards Ethiopia, I would like to recall that in the beginning of the year, that is in January, the Ethiopian government has adopted a number of measures, that is to expand and open up the democratic and political space. And I react to this important decision by encouraging the Ethiopian authorities and also congratulate them on this important decision. We have also followed the resignation of the Prime Minister, whom I met later on, and also the commitment of the authorities of this country, that is in a consensual manner, to pursue and continue the reforms and to have a representative government. It is an ongoing process, and we have been reassured by the authorities of the country, and we think that in a concerted manner, through dialogue, through consensus, this is the way the country can move forward. You know, Ethiopia is an important country. Not only it is the headquarters, hosting the headquarters of the African Union, but also its role it plays in the region. So the situation in Ethiopia is of capital importance, and I've been reassured by the authorities that the political and social forces of this country, through consultation and dialogue, will find the formula that will allow this country to pursue and continue its way, because at the economic level it has produced very substantive results, and we hope the reforms will enable the country to move forward.
Thank you very much, Chair and Secretary. Mr. Chair, my question is, at the moment there is no clear policy towards Africa from President Donald Trump's administration. Does that bother you? Do you want more from the U.S. administration at the moment? Number two, Mr. Tillerson, you've made a statement about China, saying that China encouraged dependency, utilized corrupt deals, and endangered Africa's natural resource. Is it something that you want to say again, and what's the base of that? And Mr. Chair, do you agree with the comments of Mr. Tillerson? Final question. President Donald Trump, we've heard, has called Africa and Africans. This is something that Africa is still digesting. Do you agree with that? And do you believe President Donald Trump owes Africans an apology? Thank you very much.
And we will bring you Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's answer to that question in a later newscast.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.